Chapter 1. Claudine, he who was the first emperor, gave to each noble who entered his imperial alliance the gift of Dusang. So it was that every noble who sought to rise to the princely offices was required to survive the trials of Dusang and prove their worthiness for the sash. The Tales of Claudine. Louis eeled through a knot of shoppers, the spicy scent of fried onions tantalizing his taste buds. His belly reminded him that it had been a while since breakfast, but he ignored the faint pangs of hunger. He had a job to finish. The incomplete task lingered in his right pocket, a squishy reminder. But it would wait until he browsed the stalls. Before he completed his business in Lumios, he wanted to buy a gift for his daughter. Bright-coloured cloth awnings shaded the trestle tables of the vendors, their raucous calls and emotional bargaining points raising a clangor louder than a battlefield. The ripe fragrance of too many bodies packed together formed the undertone for every other scent in the square. Although Lumios boasted many permanent shops these days, market days' popularity endured with the smaller artisans, and Louis enjoyed the traditional bazaar. He stopped before a woodcarver's stall and touched a small bird dangling from the awning. A cunning string allowed the bright blue wings to flap when pulled, the red body remaining still on the suspending twine. "A toy for your child?" the vendor asked, a carpenter's journeyman badge strung on a plain ribbon around his neck. "Yes, for my daughter." Louis touched the black beak, and the bird twisted on the string, a red-painted eye flashing at him. "It's a blue ron?" "Eh, I thought it might amuse some noble." The journeyman held out his hand, fingers splayed. "Not that I won't sell it to you, mind." "Aren't they bigger?" The journeyman heaved a doleful sigh, hair flopping into his eyes. "That much wood is expensive. But it would make a good gift for a girl. How old is she?" 8. The corners of Louis's lips lifted and he touched the red body of the bird, so reminiscent of the hair colour he shared with Louisa. "Perfect size for an 8-year-old," an ingratiating grin accompanied the words. Louis thrust his hand into his left pocket and brought out his money pouch. He avoided the right pocket with its soggy package. "How much?" The man squinted and ran his thumbs over the tips of his fingers. 2 shekels. Should he take the offer to bargain? No, he had a job to finish. Fine. He paid over the coin and the journeyman wrapped the wooden bird in a scrap of cloth. Louis slid the gift under his doublet and into his heart pocket with a tender smile. He thanked the journeyman and strode on through the market. The broad throughfare spilled into the warehouse district and the smile dropped from his face. 3 streets down, he turned into the alley next to the dilapidated shop where the Cheapside merchant Barail ran her business in second-hand goods. The buildings crowded close here, eaves meeting overhead, casting deep shadows. Old beer and more noisome liquids splashed against his boots, but Louis ignored the stench. He retreated to the enclosing wall at the dead-end side and crouched down behind a broken barrel. Long years of discipline stilled his breath, and he found the 4th beat of his heart. That life-giving rhythm led his mind down through blood and bones, and he reached for the core strength of his Ilamar. Dusang allowed him to gather the shadows to his hands, and the quiet darkness licked along his arms. Magic sucked him out of the alley and into the shadow realm. The cold slipperiness of that not place clawed against his mind. Intent focus guided him to the location he had scouted the day before, and the icy blackness faded. As the world reformed around him, he held himself frozen in the same crouched posture, heart pumping. But he had judged his target right. The strong room was empty. Dim light filtered in through the chunky keyhole and under the door, just enough illumination to see by. On soft feet, Louis padded to the table in the center of the room. Outside, a shop bell rang. Some thief coming to fence his take with Burrell, no doubt. Louis ignored their voices, extracting the package from his right-hand pocket. The leather wrapping around the eyeballs squished under his fingers, soggy with the blood of his victim. Two steel rings tumbled out of the package, their plain bands stained crimson. From the other pocket, he drew a clean azure cloth made of the finest silk. The eyeballs of the thief, resting atop the heraldic shade, would serve as the merchant's warning. La Roche-Duchy did not tolerate thieves, nor those who bought diamonds stolen from the Winter Lady. He cleared a spot near the center of the table and draped the cloth just so, positioning the eyeballs on the steel rings he had cut off the thief's fingers. The shop bell dinged again, and the wooden floor creaked under heavy footsteps. Louis pulled in his Elamar, and blackness folded around him as the weighty tumblers of the lock clanked. The slippery darkness of the Shadow Realm spat him out in the alley again, and he leaned against the wall. The fetid reek of the dank space assaulted him, making it harder to hold the contents of his stomach down. Using his Dusang magic twice left his hands trembling and his head spinning. He waited for the stars in his vision to clear before pushing off the wall and strolling out of the alley into the broad thoroughfares of Lumios. The flow of people swept him away from the warehouse district and toward his current residence, Anchor's Rock Inn. Louis did not fight the traffic, keeping his pace even and blending with the crowd. A thunderous wail of trumpets jammed up the road at the sash docks, and high banners peaked over the sea of heads. The stag of Etendelaar Duchy pranced proudly on the gilt silk, but black lace edged the cloth. A family death? Louis wormed through the throng, using his shoulders to good effect. A bard rode at the head of the procession, his booming voice reverberating against the wooden buildings as he announced the death of Gaspard, Duke of Etendulat. Behind him rode a crew of nobles on tall horses, their gilt sashes edged with mourning black lace. In their midst rode a young woman with the argent sash of Treval, her eyes red-rimmed in a pale face. Hadn't the Duke been betrothed? The procession vanished around a corner, and the trumpets wailed again. No doubt the bard would repeat his message over and over on the way to the Marian Palace, looming over Lumios from the high terraces. Louis let the crowd's flow take him once more, his eyebrows knotting together. Duke Gaspard had been the last of his line to pass the trials of Dusang. Without an heir, what would happen to the ducal sash of Etendulat? His meandering steps ended at the door to Anchor's Rock, hanging askew on its leather hinges. He slipped up the stairs, ignoring the overflowing taproom. A pounding in his head warned him that his body had not yet recovered from the strain of using Dusang. Falling more than sitting, he lay back on the thin straw pallet. The bird in his pocket knocked against his heart, and he reached for it, but his bloody fingers made him pause. He levered himself up and hefted the clay jug from the rickety stand in the corner. Soap would be nice, but in this inn, he'd have to settle for a rinse. He extracted the bird with clean hands and pulled a red handkerchief with green edging out of his pack. His lips curved into a smile as he ran the cloth through his fingers. His daughter had given it to him as a parting gift. "It's red like our hair, Papa, and green like your eyes." With his mission completed, he could return to the north at last. He pulled the string on the wooden bird and made the wings flap. Louisa would love it. In the dim light trickling through the closed shutters, he could almost imagine an autumn afternoon in the forest with her small hand curled into his. A high-pitched screech startled him out of his reverie. A blue-ron bird? In the poor quarters of Lumios? He stuffed the handkerchief into his pocket and opened the shutters to see who merited receiving a message by bird here. Crimson claws gouged into his windowsill, red eyes glinting in the morning light. The blue ron shrieked its hunger at Louis, black beak gaping as it scented for its prey. Red and blue wings flapped, half extended, as it sought balance on the awkward perch. The blue ron lunged forward, sharp upper mandible seeking soft flesh. It was here for him. Louis stepped backward, giving the blue ron space to navigate its bulky body through the window. The bird ducked its feathered head, hopping through and landing on the bed. Talons clenched on the thin grey blankets, and unblinking red eyes stared at Louis. With a sigh, he unsheathed his dagger. The bird's blood scent would not reset until it fed from his veins. Blue Ron could find anyone whose blood they had consumed, and they made excellent messenger birds, for those who could afford the cost of rearing and training them. Louis sliced open a shallow cut on his left arm and sat down next to the blue ron. It climbed onto his lap, mouth gaping open, beak plunging down. The sack-like lower mandible clamped onto the wound, and the bird's tongue tickled along Louis's flesh. Talons tightened on his leg, but Louis ignored the flash of pain as he unstrapped the wooden messenger tube from the red and blue back. Silver buckles held the hood to the leather harness, swaying up and down as the bird sucked at the wound. Louis pulled his arm forward to make the blue ron stretch its neck. The bird lifted its beak, and he slipped the hood over the white feathered head. With the bird taken care of, Louis turned his attention to the tube. No sigil interrupted the plain dark wood of the cylinder, but his slender fingers found a small raised mark at the bottom. A tiny snake, no bigger than his fingertip. A message by bird from herself. He unscrewed the lid and extracted the thin strips of tightly rolled paper. She had encoded it, of course. He dug out his cipher book and started to decrypt. The final message made Louis check his work again. The stark command did not change. The Bloodgate is threatened by the ambitions of Baron Tybalt de Marmel of Somfa. Kill him and destroy his name and line. None with a claim to his sash may remain. In Somfa, investigate rumours of Sang sorcery. If the rumours hold true, deal with the situation as appropriate. Louis read the curt note again, then struck a sparker against his boot heel and burned both sheets of paper. He leaned back on the straw pallet, hands behind his head. Somfa was the nexus of the river barge trade network due to its position in Etendulat Duchy. And Etendulat had just lost its duke, with no clarity as to how a new one would be appointed. Louis grimaced. He did not want to go to Somfa. The Baron had a wife and, if he remembered rightly, a child. He did not want to kill a child. The red handkerchief in his pocket called him home. LaRoche's long summer days were already gone, but autumn lingered in his home duchy, orange leaves drifting past dark trunks. If he left now, he could be settled before the first snow. He wanted to enjoy the fleeting northern days and be snug and warm during the long winter dark. But what he wanted was of little concern. If the Bloodgate opened, Asipid Mala would suck the life from the world. What was one family against that risk? If wishes were horses, beggars would ride. He said the words out loud, just to hear someone speak, as he made peace with his plans being changed for him. Again. A quick shove with his toe pushed his battered hat case out from under the shabby bed. He had packed the hats for Lumios and the assassination of a merchant. Somfa and a noble target offered a fresh set of challenges, but the hats would have to do. The command had been sent by Bird. The urgency was clear. Investigate rumours of Sang sorcery. Louis shuddered and made the sign of the wheel against his chest. In public, anyone would tell you that the art of blood magic had died with the troll carls, but dark whispers spoke of forbidden practices passed from master to apprentice in crimson secrets. Herself would not send him unless she believed some of the rumours. At least this part of his mission he could execute with a light heart. No one should live under the bloody paw of a troll carl. A small leather pouch peeked out of the upper pocket of the hat case, and he extracted it with respect due to his liege. It held herself's blood crystals. He'd send the bird back to her and acknowledge the order. It was that, or repudiate his family and honour both. He pulled the red handkerchief from his pocket and laid it in the pride of place among his hats. It gleamed between their muted colours, shining as bright as Louisa's face every time he came home. He laid the wooden bird atop the handkerchief. "I'll be back as soon as I can." Saying the promise out loud gave it more weight. The lock clicked as he closed the case. He had a long way to go and much to do.